ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Friday, the 9th of January. I'm David Lipson in Canberra, coming to you from Ngunnawal country and acknowledging other custodians. Jewish community leaders have praised the Prime Minister's decision to call a National Royal Commission into anti-Semitism and social cohesion following weeks of mounting political pressure. Anthony Albanese bowed to pressure, announcing the inquiry yesterday in Canberra, where he detailed the scope of the year-long investigation. Shortly, we'll hear from the government and the opposition leader, but first, here's political reporter Samantha Dick.
For some Australians in Bondi, the Prime Minister's announcement of a national royal commission into anti-Semitism and social cohesion should have come much sooner.
Yeah, he is late. He's too slow.
Totally should have been happened straight away. Yeah, definitely.
After weeks of lobbying and despair over last month's massacre, Jewish community leaders have embraced the national inquiry as a glimmer of hope.
It's certainly better late than never, and it's not too late.
Colin Rubenstein, Executive Director of the Australia, Israel and Jewish Affairs Council, says a national royal commission that extends beyond the jurisdiction of New South Wales was critical.
This hatred, this extremism doesn't stop at the boundaries of New South Wales. It's a nationwide problem.
The national inquiry will be led by former High Court Justice Virginia Bell, supported by work conducted by former ASIO boss Dennis Richardson, who's leading a review into Australia's national security and intelligence agencies. As part of her inquiry, Commissioner Bell will have the power to investigate the drivers of anti-Semitism, make recommendations to law enforcement, border and security agencies, examine the circumstances of the Bondi terror attack, and make any other recommendations to strengthen social cohesion and counter-extremism. The Prime Minister last night defended accusations he was slow off the mark.
A half-hearted announcement of something without who the Royal Commission was going to be, without timeframes, without terms of reference, wouldn't have created less speculation, it would have created more.
Senior counsel Greg McIntyre, who joined more than 200 prominent legal figures in signing an open letter calling for a federal royal commission, says he's satisfied with the inquiry's terms of reference.
The terms of reference are sufficiently broad for the commissioner to make very useful and important findings and recommendations.
But Mr. McIntyre says Commissioner Bell must take care to ensure her probe into the Bondi terror attack does not interfere with criminal proceedings, and thinks the delivery of the Commission's final report by December this year will be a challenge.
The chance of it being completed within the timeframe is probably remote.
For Jewish leaders like Colin Rubenstein, the inquiry marks the start of a process he hopes will lead to healing.
The outpouring of condolence and sympathy from our fellow Australians has been very reassuring.
That's Jewish leader Colin Rubenstein ending Samantha Dick's report. Mark Butler is a senior minister in the Albanese government with strong ties to the Jewish community. Minister, thanks for being with us. The government had argued right up to 10 days ago a royal commission would take too long and be too broad. And the terms of reference as announced yesterday are indeed pretty wide. Is one commissioner going to be able to deliver a comprehensive report into such a complex issue in just 11 months?
We are very confident in the ability of Virginia Bell. She's a very eminent legal jurist, responsible with experience in royal commissions, particularly of this type. And of course, she'll be assisted by Dennis Richardson, who will continue his work looking into the lessons that we can learn at a Commonwealth level by our security and policing agencies in response to the terror attack on the 14th of December.
It is clear there was a good deal of reluctance in government initially to announce a federal royal commission. Not only were we told it would take too long, we were told it wasn't what experts had recommended, we were told it would platform hate. Why was the government so publicly against this at the start?
Well, it's important to say that government was focused from the first day after this horrific terror attack on the urgent and immediate work we needed to do, and your listeners would expect us to do, particularly to update and strengthen hate speech laws to shut down once and for all these hate preachers and the organisations that employ them, that foment the hate that we've seen play out so tragically, but also gun laws, a range of updates to the ability to list terror organisations, to deal with visa holders, and also to accelerate the implementation of the work by Gillian Siegel, the anti-Semitism envoy. But all through that time, of course, we were working with the New South Wales government, which had indicated they would be intending to lead a royal commission about how that would work.
And did that make it harder for you to announce one?
Well, there was always going to be a royal commission. It would either be led by New South Wales or it would be led by the Commonwealth. I mean, obviously, it's unsustainable to have two royal commissions essentially into the same issue. So we were talking to New South Wales. We'd indicated, obviously, at a very public level, our willingness to cooperate if that was the basis of a royal commission into these events and this issue of anti-Semitism. But the important thing the Prime Minister pointed out yesterday and last night is all through that time we were listening, not just to the New South Wales government, but so importantly to families of victims, to local rabbis. The Prime Minister was sitting down in living rooms with them, not with the cameras, very privately, and listening to the voices, not just of the Jewish community, but of other organisations around the country, making the case for a Commonwealth-led Royal Commission. And we've heard those voices and we've made that decision.
Now, I fully accept that and accept that you were doing other important work. I guess my point is, do you concede that out of respect for the victims and the community, in hindsight, it would have been better to keep options open publicly rather than argue so strongly against a royal commission in recent weeks?
Well, some of the arguments you just mentioned were important arguments to ensure that no royal commission is used as a platform for simply more hate, for our ability to make sure criminal proceedings weren't prejudiced and such like. And you see in the terms of reference that the Prime Minister released yesterday, they are dealt with. And we're very confident that someone with Virginia Bell's experience and sharp mind, we are going to be able to see that Royal Commission delivered before the end of the year and in a way that ensures none of those adverse consequences arise.
What is your message now to the broader community about getting behind this Royal Commission? Because not everyone even wanted a Royal Commission.
Well, I think very broad support for a Royal Commission, not just from the Jewish community itself, but from business, in my area of responsibility, from health organisations. So we're confident that this will have the support of the community. We're very reassured that it has the support of Jewish community leaders. We've seen that in the last 24 hours as well. And now's the time to come together.
Mark Butler, thank you.
Thanks, David.
And Mark Butler is a senior minister in the Albanese government. Susan Lee is the leader of the opposition. Susan Lee, thanks for being with us. You are in outback Queensland now, touring the flood-affected areas. You have been calling for a federal royal commission almost every day since the attack in Bondi. You've now got what you wanted. Are you willing to fully support this inquiry now to help lower the temperature in the community?
David, I am calling from Richmond. I'm on my way to Julia Creek. It is heartbreaking to see what these communities have been exposed to, and everyone is very nervous about more rain coming at the weekend. We in the Liberal and National parties stand with the people of outback Queensland in something that they are facing with real, real anxiety, and we know that it's going to be a tough time. And with respect to the Commonwealth Royal Commission that has been called, we welcome it on behalf of every fair-minded Australian, because it's the victims, it's the victims' families, and it's the millions of Australians who have been calling for this Commonwealth Royal Commission for over 3 weeks, who've had the victory today, yesterday, when this was called. But it isn't about wins and losses. This was always above politics, always about the national interest in the face of a national crisis. And it is just so important that the work of this Royal Commission unravel and reveal actions and inactions from Anthony Albanese's government, particularly over the last 2 years, which is why one of the tests that we set was that ministers be effectively in the dock, asked questions and call to account.
You did say in a press release late yesterday that a single commissioner is inadequate for an inquiry of this scale, complexity and importance. Do you stand by that statement, and are you aware of anyone else in the community who continues to publicly share those concerns?
We would have preferred three commissioners because exactly of the scale, complexity and the timeline. We know that this work is vast and it's important, and that anti-Semitism reaches across jurisdictions, across agencies, across civil society and non-government organisations, into every corner of Australia. And we have heard that. I have heard those stories and listened to the heartbreak from Jewish Australians for so long, that I want this to be what all of the country wants it to be. So yes, we would have preferred three commissioners, but it's vital that the submissions and the process capture the scope of what this needs to do.
Before Christmas, you also put out an extensive list of what you wanted to see in the terms of reference. Is there anything missing from the announcement yesterday?
Look, we will examine the terms of reference closely. They were released yesterday. The conduct of the Royal Commission needs to go deep and wide and, as I said, far into society. And it really does need to confront anti-Semitism, because I have to say, listening to the Prime Minister's litany of excuses over the last 3 weeks, we would question whether he and his ministers really understand the challenge that this country is facing with anti-Semitism. And I mean, if the Prime Minister had been as determined to eradicate anti-Semitism in Australia over the past 3 years as he has been to avoid this Royal Commission over the last 3 weeks, our country may not have found itself in the position we do today.
Susan Lee, thank you.
Thanks, David.
The opposition leader there. There's been an outpouring of anger across the United States after a woman was shot dead in her car by a federal immigration officer in the city of Minneapolis yesterday. The incident has ignited protests against the Trump administration's increasingly violent immigration crackdown. Our correspondent Ben Knight is in Minneapolis. Ben, you're there now. What is it like there on the ground?
Look, it's pretty tense, David. There is a small protest going on here outside what is essentially the local headquarters of Customs and Border Patrol here in Minneapolis. They're facing off against a group of Border Patrol agents that are around about the same size. It's extremely tense. It's been peaceful. It wasn't this morning. There was a much larger group that turned up this morning at the beginning of the day, I think probably trying to block the ICE agents from going in or coming out. That was dispersed with pepper balls and gas. There have been a few arrests. There have been a few scuffles. There's been a bit of gas going around. But look, people here are very, very upset. They're telling us a couple of things. One of them is that they're telling us that they want to see an arrest. They want to see a prosecution. That's probably unlikely. The FBI is taking over the investigation. The state authorities say that they're being shut out of it. But in reality, law enforcement officers involved in these kinds of shootings have a lot of protection under the law, and that's no different in this case. But the other thing that people here are saying to us is they just want Border Patrol out of Minneapolis. As they point out, we're 2,000 kilometres from the border here. It's freezing cold, and you have these officers walking around with Border Patrol emblazoned on their bulletproof vest. Let's have a listen to what a couple of them told me today.
Minnesota nice was always our reputation, Minnesota nice. And granted, with the George Floyd whole issue, I thought we'd had that kind of locked up, that you can't do inappropriate things even if you're military based or police officer.
I don't have anything against Border Patrol. I just don't think they should be in Minnesota. Their job is to be on our southern border.
I was crying like 10 minutes ago because this is just sad. They're taking people who are innocent and have families and lives, and even if they aren't citizens, they still deserve like humanity.
Some of the locals there in Minneapolis. Ben, as one of them said, this is the city where George Floyd was killed, and we saw what happened in the wake of that, an explosion of violence that spread across the country. We are also seeing these deep divisions in US politics up close. What are both sides of politics saying?
Yeah, Donald Trump very quickly came out and inflamed the situation. So did Kristi Noem, the head of Border Patrol, who called the woman who was killed, Renee Nicole Good, a domestic terrorist. Vice President J.D. Vance has been speaking just a short time ago, called her a member of an organised, you know, leftist operation. Then you have the state governor, Tim Walz, who's pleading with them to de-escalate and to calm it down. Now, it has to be said, this is not a George Floyd-style protest. It's just not the same size. But that's not to say that it's not resonating across the country. It is. It's huge news. It's a point of discussion. We saw protests in other cities about this. It's brought to a head, I think, this frustration, this concern about having Border Patrol agents in American cities. And here in Minneapolis, it's the largest operation that they've had. There are more than 2,000 officers turned up here, you know, recently, which is one of the reasons why we're in the situation that we're in.
Just very briefly, is there any sign this could be a turning point for this policy of ICE agents removing illegal immigrants across the country in this way?
Well, based on what we're hearing out of the White House and from other leaders, no, it doesn't seem like it. I don't think that was ever going to be the case. This is something that Donald Trump was partially elected on. There are plenty of people who support Border Patrol. What this is about is people who say this is not the way to do it. People's lives are being damaged and now someone's been killed.
That's our correspondent Ben Knight in Minneapolis. Victoria is bracing for catastrophic fire conditions today, described as the most hazardous since Black Summer 6 years ago. A number of emergency warnings are in place for bushfires already burning in the state, and properties have been lost. Large parts of the country, meanwhile, are facing heatwave warnings, with temperatures expected to soar over 40 degrees in some areas. Kimberly Price reports.
It was an anxious night for residents in Victoria's northeast and central districts, with two major bushfires burning and the threat far from over. Today, catastrophic conditions are forecast. Peter Tolsha is the mayor of Tawong Shire in the northeast corner of the state.
We're looking at mid-40s temperature with extreme fire conditions and weather. You know, dry lightning's a possibility. So, look, everyone's very worried and I'm very worried for our community.
Two relief centres have opened up in the region and Peter Tolsha urged residents to activate their fire plans.
If you're prepared to stay and fight, make sure you can stay and fight without the support of CFA, because there is no guarantee that CFA or Fire Forest Management are going to be there to support you. And I just want everybody to stay safe out there.
Morgan Pumper from the Bureau of Meteorology says today's wind speed and direction across northeast Victoria is adding to catastrophic conditions across several districts.
So we are getting some strong wind gusts where we are getting to around that 40, 50 kilometres per hour. That's for the averages. That's all going to be very concerning for the fire behaviour that we have with the current fires in the landscape, but also any possible storms that we get.
First responders are preparing. Ambulance Victoria has issued their highest level of response, a red escalation, which means crews will only be deployed today to high-risk areas for serious or life-threatening illnesses. A total fire ban has been declared for Victoria, while across the country, soaring temperatures persist. In Western Australia, parts of the state are expected to hit 47 degrees. Total fire bans are in place for 11 out of 15 South Australian districts and parts of New South Wales. President of the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners, Dr. Michael Wright, is urging people to stay out of the heat.
But it's really important that we don't get complacent. Staying in air conditioning, using fans where you can. Importantly, not going outside in the middle of the day if you can possibly avoid it. So keeping hydrated.
There's also a concern for animals in extreme heat. Lisa Palmer is the CEO of Wildlife Victoria and says on Wednesday this week there was a huge spike in reported heat-stressed wildlife. She says there's things households can do to help.
Place containers of varying sizes filled with water outside, putting up umbrellas, tarps, even sheets, and putting sprinklers on or hosing your garden down to reduce the ambient temperature will really, really help keep wildlife cool.
Relief from the heat is forecast for much of the country by the end of the weekend.
Kimberly Price and Angus Randall reporting there. That's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm David Lipson.